Now, from the left coast, it's another podcast edition of the Peter B. Collins Show. Peter B. is curious, opinionated, and relentless in pursuit of the truth like a honeybee drawn to pollen. He's an independent progressive, ready to sting Republicans and Democrats alike when they deserve it. After years in commercial radio, Peter B. welcomes you to this audio adventure in news and politics with no corporate filter. Listeners support this program, and you can help at peterbcollins.com. Here's your humble host, Peter B.
Nice going. Thanks for downloading the latest in-depth interview podcast from peterbcollins.com. You know, I learn a lot in many of these interviews, and today, Howard Vlieger, an activist and a farmer from Northwest Iowa, joins me. As Levon Helm would say,
oh, the poor old dirt farmer, he's lost all his corn. And now where's the money to pay off his loan?
Howard Vlieger is an organic farmer from Northwest Iowa, and he's been studying soils, pesticides, genetically modified organisms. He's done his research. And he doesn't buy what the big agribusiness conglomerates like Monsanto are selling. I think you'll find this a fascinating conversation about the state of agriculture in the United States today. This podcast is made possible by listeners like you who support my work with your subscriptions, including Mark Giorgini, who just renewed his annual subscription. Thanks, Mark. Jerry in Southeast Portland, Kevin Beckley, and Pauline Nixon. The great Nixon. I'd like you to join them. Just visit peterbcollins.com. Find the menu button, pull it, then click on Become a Subscriber. You'll land on the sign-up page, and from there you can choose a subscription that's comfortable for you and your budget. Thanks for listening, and thanks for your support.
Welcome to this conversation. I'm Peter B. Collins. Joining me today is Howard Vlieger, a third-generation family farmer, who calls himself a student of the soil. Since 1989, he's studied why and how the soil works. He lives on his family farm, where he was born and raised, in Northwest Iowa, and he currently assists his son with some of the farming duties. Since 1992, Howard has been a crop nutrition advisor and has started two companies to help family farmers reduce their dependency on chemical-based farming and the transition to biological and or organic production. Howard now works and teaches as an independent crop and livestock nutrition advisor, helping farmers all across the U.S. Howard, thanks for making time in your busy schedule to be with us today. Besides being a creative businessman, I understand that you've also done some of the only real-life research on genetically modified crops and their effects on livestock. Let's begin with that. Talk about what started you on this path to learn a lot about soils and also look at the technological developments, including genetically modified organisms and the new generation of seeds and pesticides that we know best through Roundup and Roundup Ready seeds.
Well, thank you for having me. It's a pleasure to be with you.
Well, it's nice to meet you.
Likewise. What started me on this path? That simple. Desperation. I started farming in 1981, which was probably the worst time you could have started in the recent history. Things were high. The bottom fell out of it. We survived, thankfully. Just getting back on our feet in 1988, we had a drought. And we had just a little bit more crop than what crop insurance guarantee was, and that was not a good position financially. So in 1989, when we started using the biological crop production methods, it was out of desperation. But it was the best thing that could have happened because it forced us to look at the soil, which is a crop farmer's most valuable asset. After we saw the benefits and the successes that we did, then I decided that, hey, share this information with others who may be interested. And that started in 1992. And I was fortunate to probably be in the largest research arena you ever could have stepped into, because we were working with all these different operations. When GMOs were coming out, we were a full service crop supply business. We had custom application, all crop inputs, seed, fertilizer, you name it. We needed to offer that to be a viable provider for our customers. So I started studying GMOs in 1994. And, you know, everything was promised to us on a silver plate. So we looked at it objectively instead of euphorically. And when the seed company provided the BT corn the first year, which was 1997, we did a side-by-side comparison.
And for non-farmers, BT stands for?
Bacillus thuringiensis. It's a hybrid that has an active insecticide in it that if corn borer were to bite that plant, it would kill the corn borer.
Mm-hmm.
And all BT hybrids are registered as an insecticide with EPA. So you're basically growing an insecticide.
And we then harvest insecticides and put them on the table.
Oh, yeah, but don't worry, that all doesn't show up. It doesn't. You got to listen to the commercials. There's no problems with this. Science has proven otherwise, of course. The study out of Canada, they found the BT toxin in 93% of the pregnant women's blood that they tested.
Mm.
And 85% of them passed it on to their babies. But anyway, we were witnessing the ill effects of the genetically engineered crop as it entered the feed supply through our customers. You know, the marketing approach of the genetically engineered seed was, if you're not using it, you're missing out, you're behind the times. We had proved in our 2 years back-to-back research, when you had good overall management, soil management, balanced plant nutrition, and a sound hybrid, BT didn't make you money, it cost you money. It was over $55 an acre it cost us both years in reduced net income.
Mm-hmm.
Then when the problems...
And it's not just an issue of yields, it is the quality of the crop, right? You explained to me before we sat down that, for example, the moisture level in crops can affect the value and just the efficiency of using that to convert to a food product.
When all things were equal, and you do a true side-by-side comparison of the BT, if you're in a year where your heat unit accumulation is lacking, not as abundant as you may want, you are going to find that the BT will be wetter at harvest because you're extending that variety's maturity by 2 to 5 days, depending on what the capabilities of the variety is.
Mm-hmm.
Some of our customers caught on quick when they looked at the BT, because if it was a good sound hybrid, the BT never paid, even when you had a year with the corn borer pressure that would justify its use. If it was a hybrid that the plant breeders stopped short on doing their job and it didn't have the natural resistance that it should and could have, then the BT would work in a year where you had the pressure. Well, some of the customers will say, well, the plant breeder got lazy, didn't finish his job. The seed company took a shortcut. They charged more for the seed, so which direction were they going to go? Then the thing that happened as it moved further, as the technology companies took ownership of the hybrid development companies, they started stacking the deck. They only put the top elite, best-performing, yielding hybrids out in a genetically engineered version. So did they yield more, or did they stack the deck? And we proved numerous times that they were stacking the deck. They did it both with the BT as well as the herbicide-tolerant varieties.
Now, Howard, don't they also stack the deck in terms of scientific studies, where there's an unholy alliance between corporations like Bayer and Monsanto and agriculture/research universities?
I'll send you an email with a document that is a definition I sat down and wrote one day, and I can't quote it to you line and verse because it's a couple paragraphs long. I wrote it and I sent it to Dr. Huber, who I'm privileged to work with him in research on an ongoing basis, and he edited it. And it talks about sound science and junk science. In essence, sound science, in their definition, is a study that's designed and paid for by the person that's going to benefit from the results of the study. The study doesn't have to be properly designed as a good study. It just needs to provide the results that they want that are beneficial for the sale of this product. And conversely, junk science is a well-designed study that is conducted properly that demonstrates either a real problem or a reason, a cause for concern, and that immediately is labeled junk science because it's not beneficial for industry.
Yeah. And indulge me for a moment, because I grew up in Ohio, and I started working in radio in small towns. And every radio station I was on had an agriculture report, and it was sponsored by a local co-op or the grain elevator company or a seed company. And I'm just curious, in Iowa, out in the boonies, do radio stations have an impact, and do companies like Monsanto or their distributors sponsor these radio stations to the point where they won't allow discussion or criticism of the products that their sponsors are pushing and that you find so much problem with?
There's no unbiased reporting in that farm network, the farm broadcasting network.
Mm-hmm.
I have a good friend that is involved in it, and he does a good job of telling both sides of the story. But you're correct in the fact that the ads are paid for by just a handful of companies. And the thing that a lot of people don't really realize, you know, a lot of people know that the chemical companies own the majority of the seed companies today. But not a lot of people know that those same companies are in the pharmaceutical business.
Well, Bayer in particular, and this proposed merger of Bayer and Monsanto has really got a lot of serious issues.
In the email I send you, I'll include a graphic that demonstrates this in a manner that I don't say anything. I just ask questions and people fill in the blanks, and it's quite revealing.
Mm-hmm. Now, Howard, explain to our viewers what the significant problems are for humans who are at the end of the food chain that uses genetically modified organisms. We know about some of the impacts on gut health, and in a moment we'll talk about a book that you and I both know about. But give us a little, you have obviously great technical knowledge of agriculture, so help a layperson understand what you see as the major negative impacts of GMO foods.
The neat part about being a student of the soil is when you understand that, it makes everything else all the way up the food chain simpler. The healthy soil should be in many ways the same as a healthy digestive tract, whether it's in a two-legged mammal or a four-legged mammal. And, of course, there's differences in the types of digestive systems. Healthy soil is full of beneficial bacteria and fungi and protozoa, microarthropods, amoeba, nematodes. All of those are... the good Lord put them there for a reason, so that this was a regenerative, self-sufficient system. You put in the synthetic materials that are used for crop production, whether it's fertilizer, chemicals, the foreign proteins from the genetically engineered crop, they all cause a disruption here. The thing that we've learned from the soil and that is magnifying and increasing at epidemic levels in our population, when you mess with that balance, there's going to be a price to pay. And glyphosate is the elephant in the room. You know, it's hard to get your to wrap your fingers around the foreign protein aspect of genetically engineered crops. It's an in-depth, longer discussion. But glyphosate is a broad spectrum chelator. Chelate's a Greek word meaning claw or to hold, and it will tie up nutrition. It makes mineral nutrition bio-unavailable at very minute levels. It ties up calcium, magnesium, manganese, zinc, iron, copper, nickel, cobalt, boron, selenium, molybdenum, and potassium. And just a minuscule amount present with those minerals ties up nutrition in the soil, in the plant, in the fruit of that plant.
And when you say ties up, does that mean that these elements can be detected, but
not
they're
available.
Not released?
They're bio-unavailable. Even if there's microbial activity, that chelation effect of glyphosate is so strong that you cannot access and get the nutrition and energy from the presence of that mineral. In addition to that, glyphosate is a very potent biocide or antibiotic. The developer of Roundup herbicide has a patent on it for that.
Mm-hmm.
And it only takes, based on independent scientific research, it only takes a tenth of a part per million of glyphosate residue, glyphosate being the active ingredient in the broad-spectrum non-selective herbicides that are used on genetically engineered crops.
Mm-hmm.
It only takes a tenth of a part per million of glyphosate residue to kill the beneficial organisms in the digestive tract. This has been documented in the soil. Dr. Robert Kramer, who's a retired USDA ag research scientist, started researching this in 1996. He showed the damaging effects of glyphosate to the beneficial organisms in the soil. Dr. Monica Kruger, who's a researcher, veterinary pathologist, retired now from Leipzig University in Germany, she proved in chickens and in cattle the damage that that minuscule level of glyphosate would cause to not only reduce or eliminate the populations of beneficial organisms, but in many instances, it also is a food source for the opportunistic. So we kill the good bugs that will keep the disease in check, and we become a food source for the opportunistic. So we take away the control and then feed the bad guys. Then you wonder why we have leaky gut and irritable bowel syndrome and Crohn's disease at epidemic rates in our mm-hmm. country.
Now, Howard, let me see if I'm getting this right. When you talk about these foreign proteins, okay, let me ask you to compare. If I eat corn that came through the GMO chain, all right, and I ingest the defective food product that you just described, is that less problematic than eating pork or beef from livestock that was fed with that GMO corn? So I'm wondering if there's an amplifying effect when I eat a meat product that is down the chain from a GMO feed.
That's an excellent question, and one that nobody can adequately answer because the research hasn't been conducted.
Okay.
The foreign protein does survive digestion. We know that. Otherwise, the BT wouldn't have been found in the pregnant women's blood. The combination of the foreign protein and the glyphosate residue we also know is an amplification of the potential problem.
Mm-hmm.
But through the animal, you can't, that's never been researched, but I would say let your taste buds tell you the difference. Take a non-GMO fed, no antibiotic fed, no growth hormone raised animal, and compare that meat to the CAFO GM fed. You know, the number one objective in the CAFO livestock production, let's be the least cost producer. Let's raise that animal as low at a cost as we can. That's how we survive and make money. And then, you know, that's not necessarily the farmer's fault. They've been forced into that by multiple factors in the whole food production system.
Mm-hmm.
But what do you want? Something that somebody's, what you want to eat something that somebody's been trying to get the cheapest cost commodity production they can so they can survive and make a living? Or do you want to eat something of someone that who's focusing on giving you the maximum nutrient density that's raising food instead of a commodity?
Oh, I know I want the cheaper, faster stuff. We're talking with Howard Vlieger here, and just for show and tell, I decided to bring this book in, and we recently interviewed the authors, who are both from here in Marin County, Dr. Michelle Perro and Dr. Vincent Adams. And when you saw the book, you had a little sly grin, and you asked me if I'd read it. Well, at least a dozen of our viewers have seen this interview, and I'm not too powerful here at the TV station, but I'm going to ask the scheduler to put this interview back-to-back with my interview with Drs. Perro and Adams, because they took a look at the impact, particularly of GMO foods, on seriously unhealthy young people, toddlers and children, and they came up with some really dramatic findings. And you told me that you met Dr. Perro at one of your educational forums, and then she asked you to be one of the proofreaders on this book. It's a small world, Howard. So now, if you could make the connection between what we talked about in terms of healthy soil with the issues that are raised in this book about how GMO foods, exposure to pesticides, and other environmental factors are contributing to these serious chronic illnesses in children.
First of all, I feel extremely privileged to have worked with Dr. Perro as long as I have, and I haven't had as much experience with Vincent, but that's been great as well.
Mm-hmm.
I really respect him for doing this. The soil is, as I said before, it's supposed to be full of beneficial microbial activity.
With happy worms, right?
Exactly. Good bugs, smiling bugs, happy bugs, not bad disease-causing bed bugs. It's very simple what's happening. The soil is messed up, so we're not getting the uptake of the nutrition into the crops, even if it wasn't genetically engineered. When the soil is messed up, you don't get the nutrient density in the crop you raise, and that deficiency of nutrition is going all the way up the food chain. You don't have as high a nutrient density in the crop, so that translates if you eat it or if you feed it to an animal, that nutrient density is slipped. That same thing happens. What's happening in humans, they're consuming bulk hollow calories. Number one, because of misguided production practices that are focused on sustaining companies that sell inputs to farmers, not the soil or the farmer. And those bulk hollow calories cause the craving for more food. So that's contributing significantly to the obesity. You couple with that the contaminants from the glyphosate and the other problems, and the effect that's having on the microbiome, they're calling it the seventh organ now, the microbiome mm-hmm. of the gut. Well, the more we learn, the more we see how many things are disrupted as far as the overall health because they don't have the good bugs functioning.
Mm-hmm.
And it's the saying is healthy soil, healthy plants, healthy animals, healthy people. Well, if it's sick soil, it's sick plants, it's sick animals, and it's sick people.
Mm-hmm.
And regrettably, it's manifesting the most in our children.
Well, this is all very fascinating, and I wanted to ask if you're familiar with a San Francisco-based magazine called Mother Jones. They do investigative journalism, and they regard themselves as muckrakers. And this article is headlined, "Is Russia Using the GMO Debate to Troll Americans?" Now, I don't know if this has trickled down to Iowa, but let me just read the opening lines here. Genetically modified foods remain controversial for many reasons, but at this point, the majority of scientists view them as safe to eat. The rest of Americans aren't so sure. According to a major poll conducted in 2015, 57% of the general public thought consuming them was unsafe. Then they go on in a speculative way to try to claim that those Russian bots and the people at the troll factory in St. Petersburg contributed to this ignorance that is widespread among Americans, that GMOs are potentially dangerous. And this is from a lefty publication that I used to respect. And I find it remarkable that they have joined the chorus in basically trying to call us idiots if we are skeptical of the safety of GMO food products. And now we can blame the Russians.
The first thought that comes to my mind when you bring this up, I was privileged to be tutored by Dr. Arpad Pusztai, who is, in many people's opinion, the first true pioneer and highly qualified scientist, just pristine research. And when he did the research on the first GMO food item, which was the BT potato, he believed that it was going to be a good thing. He was totally alarmed when he saw the devastating effects that that foreign protein caused to the lab animals that they fed it to. The first verbal conversation I had with Dr. Pusztai, he said to me, "I cannot believe how unknowing and uncaring the people in your country are about the food they put in their bodies." Something like that, the best way I can summarize it is it's a massive amount of organic material from an intact bovine male. And it shows the desperation, in my opinion, of the industry that knows they cannot win this discussion in the open because is not the customer right? So if the customer asks for something and you say, "You have to have this because it's what we're going to control, it's what we're going to provide you," they're going to reach to any and every level they have to try and save face, because who wants to buy it?
You've been active in efforts in Oregon where GMOs are banned, in Washington where I believe they're labeled, and California where we've lost two initiatives trying to require labeling of GMO food products. We've seen industries who protested that they couldn't possibly do this, it would be too expensive, like the cereal companies, have voluntarily started to label their products, and it's because of polls that show that consumers resist GMO products. So there's a little bit of an opening. We just have about a minute left, Howard. What do you recommend that our viewers do to try to keep this movement going, to try to educate fellow citizens, and ultimately to try to change the dynamic?
The first thing is don't accept what seems to be the new normal. It's not normal for kids to be on mood-altering medication before they're old enough to walk. It's not normal for this epidemic residual illness that we have. Like Dr. Perro says, do a simple test. Change your diet for 30 days and look at the results. And it's so significant how we can have a radical improvement. And it will turn. This whole thing is going to turn. The demand for clean, nutrient-dense, contaminant-free food, the more it increases, the bigger the supply is going to be.
Howard Leager, it's a real pleasure to meet you, and I learned a lot. Thanks for joining us today.
Thank you for having me.
Thanks for listening to my conversation with farmer and activist Howard Leager. Send your comments to Peter at peterbcollins.com.
Happy trails to you until we meet again. Happy trails.